relevant expert to locate it.
2 Samuel 9. David asked, "Is there still anyone left of the house of Saul to whom I may show kindness for Jonathan's sake?" Now there was a servant of the house of Saul whose name was Ziba, and he was a summoned to David. The king said to him, "Are you Ziba?" And he said, "At your service." The king said, "Is there anyone remaining of the house of Saul to whom I may show the kindness of God?" Ziba said to the king, "There remains a son of Jonathan. He is crippled in his feet." The king said to him, "Where is he?" Ziba said to the king, "He is in the house of Machir, son of Amiel, at Lodabar." Then King David sent and brought him from the house of Machir, son of Amiel, at Lodabar. Mephibosheth, son of Jonathan, son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and did obeisance. David said, "Mephibosheth." He answered, "I am at your service." David said to him, "Do not be afraid, for I will show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan. I will restore to you all the land of your grandfather Saul, and you yourself shall eat at my table always." He did obeisance and said, "What is your servant, that you should look upon a dead dog such as I?" Then the king summoned Saul's servant Ziba and said to him, "All that belonged to Saul and to all his house I have given to you, your master's grandson. You and your sons and your servants shall till the land for him and shall bring in the produce, so that your master's grandson may have food to eat. But your master's grandson Mephibosheth shall always eat at my table." Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Then Ziba said to the king, "According to all that my lord the king commands his servant, so your servant will do." Mephibosheth ate at David's table, like one of the king's sons. Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah, and all who lived in Ziba's house became Mephibosheth's servants. Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem, for he always ate at the king's table. Now he was lame in both his feet.
So I've kept you on the edge of your seats. Thanks to the revolution of social media, you all have been invited into the labor and delivery room of my daughter's birth. Whether you wanted to or not, we're here. And so we ended last time with my wife absolutely lost, her eyes glazing over, this sense that she cannot go on any longer. And then something hit the room. That divine spark from within her just came out. This is what happened next. 6:05 p.m. Indescribable moans, groans, and wailings. As a male at this point, I am in awe. Stacy is the stallion's more powerful female partner, the mare. Can you feel me? It was a powerful moment. And at this point, men, young men of the United Methodist Church, look around you at the women in your midst. They have a power we know not about, and bow to them now, to the right and to your left. I didn't see a lot of bowing going on. You will learn. It's all right. Onward we go. At 6:35 p.m., Stacy clings to my body and I feel every muscle, organ, bone, and blood vessel focused on one pursuit: the birth of our baby. The drum roll comes. 6:36. Joy exceeding, tears flowing. Our new baby is here. Welcome by baby Irena. We call her Irie. 8 pounds, 10 ounces. Hashtag, this is freaking awesome. Here's the picture. And what's amazing, as I was in that room, that space, for 16 hours of pain and lostness, in that 1 minute, I held that baby girl in my arms and my eyes into her eyes, and I felt located. All of that pain was all of a sudden made sense in those little eyes. I had to receive a gift and believe that this little girl was the beloved. That I now had a new identity to be a dad, and Stacy now had a new identity to be a mom. We were located. We were found. Things all made sense in that one single minute. And then there's Mephibosheth hanging out in Lo-Debar, a crippled boy. By this time in the story, it's 5 chapters since chapter 4, and Mephibosheth is probably a young man, 13 maybe, maybe 14. He's in Lo-Debar. He's crippled. He is being raised by Ziba, his servant, who tends to the land that's been sharecropped for them in ancient Israel. And King David, the main player on the story, as you know, the Mephibosheth is the minority report in this whole saga. King David in chapter 9 has now become the king. He has fought in the land and beat everyone. And finally, he is the king. And as he looks back on his long journey to become a king, he awakes from that amnesia of violence that comes over someone who lives by the sword. And he says, "Who's left of the house of Saul that I can show kindness for Jonathan's sake?" That word, kindness, that's the word hased in Hebrew. And one word does not do justice to it. It's one of those words that needs a lot more English words for us to understand the depth, the width, and the richness of it. Hased means God's steadfast love. It means faithfulness, committed loyalty, dynamic love, covenant fidelity, or that gift on top of a gift, over and over. A relentless type of love that seeks and pursues and is radical and revolutionary and never gives up on anyone. That's God's love. And in this passage, David will quote hased 3 times. This is God's love shimmering forth to us, shining in this passage for us. And so David says, "Bring me, who can tell me, where is this son of Jonathan?" So Ziba comes in and says, "Hey, Mephibosheth, he's hanging out at home." And we'll find out more about Ziba tomorrow, but he has some suspect motives in the story. So Ziba goes all the way back to Lo-Debar, mounts Mephibosheth on a horse because as a crippled boy, he could not mount himself. And Mephibosheth makes the journey back to Jerusalem, the place he was born. The place where during the Civil War he was dropped as a baby. The very place where his lostness began. Now, remember how ancient warfare works. In ancient Israel warfare, you absolutely crush all of anyone who has any claim to the kingship is done. So Mephibosheth, he's the grandson of the king. He still has some rights to the throne. So when the king gives you an invitation to come to Jerusalem, and when the king, when there's a little saying that goes on in the streets, "Saul has killed his thousands, but David his tens of thousands," Mephibosheth, he's not dumb. He's thinking, "This is it. They're bringing me to Jerusalem to finally end my miserable, shameful, lost existence in Lo-Debar. This is it." So when he gets to the palace, he does what every wise man should do with facing these realities before a king. He throws himself before the king and he says, "Here I am, my lord, the king." And then David says this, moved by this, "Do not be afraid, for I will show you kindness for the sake of your father, Jonathan. I will restore to you all the land of your grandfather, Saul, and you yourself will eat at my table always." So once again, this hased, the gift on top of a gift. But then we have this other idea, the table. In this passage, it will talk about the table 4 times. Now, the reality of what happened is tsunamic here. King David is actually really going to show this young boy has said he is now going to be like a son to the king. He is now given a seat with all of King David's mighty men at the table. He's going to feast all the rest of the days of his life. This is the best day ever, from the lostness of Lodabar to the amazing power of becoming a son of the king. In the very place that he was dropped during the Civil War, he becomes restored, renewed, made a son of the king, located once again. She drove her car past the church. Every time she drives her car past the church, an anger boils up in her. She hasn't been there for years. She just can't handle it. But she's grown. She's learned to deal with her mental illnesses. She sought wisdom on her eating addictions and her eating disorder. She gets a phone call. The phone call is the new youth director at that church. She seems nice. She seems like someone that maybe Katie could trust. She asks her if she'd like to go on the choir tour that's coming up. Katie hesitates. She's not sure if she can put herself out there again. But then she thinks, I'll give it one more shot. She goes on the trip. And this time, instead of being mocked and ridiculed, she's embraced. She's loved. By the end of the choir tour, she begins to think, maybe I could make a difference. Maybe I could be a voice for those people who struggle with depression and eating disorders and anxiety. Maybe I could share what I've learned on this awful, horrible, dark journey. Maybe. Fast forward 3 years. Katie is now getting her degree in psychology at the University of Denver. She spends her weekends and summers dedicated to the youth ministry at St. Andrew United Methodist Church. She invests into this group of girls, and so they want to do something special for her on her 21st birthday. So they invite her to come to the church. She has no idea what's going on. They set up a table. They decorate the room. They make a cake right on that table. They have punch ready to go. And as Katie comes in, they surprise her with a happy birthday. They give her hugs. They tell her how much she's meant to them in the last 3 years. In the very place where Katie's heart was thrown and trampled on the ground, she has been found, located. The chesed of God poured out upon her. She told me this. On my birthday, I would not have wanted to be anywhere else. Amani's letters to Hassan come almost every day. As he sits in his cold, dark cell, he contemplates on what she says in those letters. She says, I love you. I believe in you. You are the best person I have ever known. He wrestles with himself. He attends Muslim services. And at the end of a Muslim service is called a prayer time, which is called a dua. And in this dua, Hassan told me it's quote from Hassan, it's getting your bag on with God. And in this dua, he finally just tells God, I'm sick of fighting. He appeals to a higher court. He had been fighting his case for 15 years, and he finally gives it up. He begins to feel a certain sense that life can be new. Life can be renewed. It doesn't have to be the way it's been. All that is in the past could be forgiven. New possibilities bursting forth. Amani's love is relentless. She visits him every week for 20 years, over 800 visits. Hassed. One time, Imani was lucky enough to get an early vacation from work and came to visit him again, just because she should. It threw Hassan off, and he was kind of frustrated because when someone loves you with that much passion, it's hard. And this is what she said to him. Hassan, there's only two places for me to be. One, with you, and two, waiting to be with you. It's a beautiful Colorado summer day. Blue skies, not a cloud to be seen. Jason's working on the grill, cooking some burgers for his family. Rachel is sitting on a seat, drinking some lemonade. She's pregnant with their next daughter. And this time, everything is healthy. Natalie is playing on one of those little slides. She gets up the stairs and goes right down that little red slide, and she smiles. Jason walks over from the grill. He kisses his wife, who's sitting in the chair, and they notice that Natalie falls off that little ladder. They both, without hesitation at all, stand up and applaud. She rolls over to her side. She picks herself up. She smiles so big at her dad and mom because her dad and mom have decided that her hands will never be a handicap, that she is beloved, that she is not a nobody, she is a somebody. She gets right back up on that slide and she cruises down that slide. She can do it. The very place where they wept, the very place called home for the Stutzmans, where every day they drove back and forth for 63 days for that little girl to come home, is the very place where Hesed is found, the place where God's Hesed is given, a gift on top of a gift. Kate was born not too long after that day, and Kate grew up in this family of bursting Hesed, and this is what she told me. Dale, our family likes to be silly at our house. We like to joke with each other and laugh a lot. We are really silly. In all three, in all four of our stories, we have to receive this gift, a baby in our arms, a moment of grace, a moment of forgiveness, a moment of love, a moment of Hesed. On top of Hesed. And then we have to believe that we are the beloved. 2,000 years ago, Jesus, coming to the very end of his life, invited his disciples into the room. He asked them simply to receive the Hesed, and to believe that they were the beloved, that the lost could now be located forever. He broke the bread, and he looked into the eyes of his friends, and he said, "This is my body given for you." He said, "This is the blood of the new covenant poured out for you." He said, "This is Hesed. And when you eat, and when you drink, and when you remember, you are saying that death is not the end, that lostness is not the final reality of our lives. You are saying that Jesus' death has now become the source of our lives. We are not lost. We are located. We've got good news tonight. When you drink and when you eat, you are saying, you are committing yourself to clothe the naked, to welcome the stranger, to visit the prisoners, to care for the sick, to embrace your God-given identities. You are saying that no one is a nobody. You are saying that Hesed will be your way of life." You receive an invitation in the mail. It's calligraphied golden. It's heavy. It's on beautiful stationery. You flip it on the back, and it has one of those fancy wax seals. You hold it in your hand because it's beautiful. Your name is written on this envelope. So slowly, you flip open that wax seal. You take out that invitation. Your heart races a little bit faster. You sense that something really important is in this envelope, or they wouldn't have taken the time. You open it up. Inside is an invitation. It's an invitation for the party of all parties, for the celebration of all celebrations. And you are invited. You're invited to the banquet of all banquets. You are invited to receive and to believe that you are the beloved. Just about then is when those fears begin to creep in. You accidentally see that a little 4-foot, 4-inch RSVP card slides onto the floor. You bend down to pick it up, and those fears inside of you ricochet like a racquetball. You say to yourself, I'm not really worthy for this. Do they really know who I am? I can't possibly be given this invitation. You bend down, you pick up the card, and it simply says this. Will you attend? Will you receive the gift and believe that you are the beloved?